RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the February 20th edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come here on this week's edition of the show, we are going to recap everything that happened last week at the Bellator events up in Mohegan, and of course the UFC event in Phoenix. Plus, we're going to preview this weekend's Bellator and UFC fight cards, both those fight cards taking place on Saturday afternoon. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. Going to hear my conversations with two men who are going to be fighting at UFC 235, Marlon Chito Vera and Cody Stabenow. Also, we'll talk to a man who's going to be fighting this weekend, Nate Smith, a flyweight fighter who's taking a fight here at bantamweight, trains out of Factory X Muay Thai. So those interviews come here later on in the show. But Daniel, man, how the hell you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well, enjoying this week. It's kind of cold in Texas, but look, man, you were the one that was traveling across the country this past weekend. You were in the wild state of Connecticut, Jason, for the two Bellator events. How was the trip, man?
It was good, man. It was good. It actually it warmed up a little bit, so it was like, I think when I landed, it was like in the mid-30s, maybe even close to the 40s. Flew into Hartford, got in that Uber, you know, and literally once I got to Mohegan, so I got there Thursday late morning. I didn't walk out of Mohegan until Sunday morning at about 6 a.m. when I was getting my Uber to go back to the hotel or go back to the airport.
You didn't do anything else.
Okay. For anyone who's not been up to Mohegan, there's nothing around it. Like literally, if you're going to leave Mohegan, you know, you have to get an Uber to go somewhere else. There's nothing in walking distance. But, I mean, literally, there's everything you'd want at Mohegan. I mean, you've got restaurants. You've got shopping. I mean, you got anything you could want there. And I will say this, Daniel. You know, when you go to these events, you're working until, you know, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. So it was Friday night and Saturday night, walking just to try to find food about 2 a.m. Man, people watching was on point.
Well, were there any crazy...
I saw a woman get arrested because the cop was basically trying to basically say, you need to leave, we leave. And she, you know, starts pushing the cop. I'm like, ooh. And the husband or boyfriend's like, honey, listen to the cop. You're going to get arrested. And yep, she got arrested.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like, I'm sitting there going, man, that has got to be a awful beat to be on. Working in a casino on a weekend at 2 o'clock in the morning. Oh man.
It is awful, but at least it's probably safe, I think. I think it's a lot safer than the normal. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're working in Connecticut as a police officer, it's probably pretty safe. Like, you ought to just worry about, I feel like, just old people playing golf. But, I think if you're in a casino more than, like, once a year, it's probably too much, Jason. And in a place like Mohegan Sun, when you have two Bellator events, is that just the hub for everybody? Like, you just see fighters coming in and out, promoters, managers, etc.
Yeah. Literally, that's where pretty much everyone was staying for the most part. I mean, obviously, you know, you might be staying somewhere else, but in terms of, you know, Bellator personnel, everyone's there. So you're walking around. I will tell you, you know, Thursday night, it was kind of, you know, wasn't too much going on. We had media day, Friday, fight day. Like, you could tell it was a fight day, but man, Saturday, the buzz was just crazy all day. And I remember, you know, I was having, you know, a little dinner before the fights were over with somebody. And, you know, like, you could just, and we were talking about, like, you could just feel there was a different buzz on Saturday night. And then I remember I leave my hotel room. So the fights were starting at, I want to say, 7:30. So I knew that I could pick up my credential at 7 o'clock. And so the credentials are right in front of, you know, the box office and the main entrance to get into the arena. And it was wall to wall people. I tweeted a photo of it. I mean, it's like, it must've took me 15 minutes just to get to a place to get to credentials. It was just amazing. And you felt it was a different energy. It was a big fight feel, but you know, one of the things, and I had talked with multiple people last week about this, cause everyone's like, who are you picking, Michael Page or Paul Daly? And I said, my fear is the first 10 minutes is going to be a staring contest. And well, that's what the first 5 minutes was.
Yeah. That first round was awful.
Like, this is, like,
it was an important round. It was theoretically a fight deciding round, honestly.
Oh, no, this is my thing. Like, I understand Paul Daly and his team's frustration not getting the scores going their way. Because I would tell you, after the fights were over, we're sitting there waiting for various people to come up for their post-fight interviews. And Daly and his entire team, his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, walked by. And Ali Abdelaziz mentioned something about, you know, the judges in the fight, which my initial thought was, okay, it's great to sit there and complain to the media. I understand why you do that. I'm sitting there going, I wonder if you aired those frustrations to the commission. But when you take off the first 5 minutes of the fight, you take off 20% of the fight, it's kind of tough to sit there and complain about it. And by God, Michael Page turned Paul Daly into a wrestler.
Yeah, that's the most insane thing in the world. That Paul Daly's goal is to take down the man who has complained so much about wrestling. If Paul Daly could choose what MMA was, he would want it to be exactly like kickboxing.
Dude, the John Fitch fight where he's complaining right in front of the camera. And as that fight was going on, that's all I could think about was, this is a guy who sat there and complained, and now and I understand the thought process of why Paul's game plan was that. But I think, as much as I understand that, I think it also says something about what Paul thought of Michael Page's striking.
I think that's 100%. Because the thing is, Paul Daly is the type of guy who, there's nothing he loves to do more in this world than go in a cage and knock somebody out. Mm-hmm. And the way the trash talk went between him and Page, I mean, I'm sure he would love to do nothing more than to go toe-to-toe with Michael Page and knock him out in the first round, humble him. And the fact that he didn't, I think, absolutely speaks to respect he has for what Michael Page brings to the table on the feet, how frustrating it could be to fight a guy like Michael Page. And, you know, that was a pivotal first round. I mean, because, you know, you can look at it two different ways. Like, round five felt like a fight decider, but in the end, so was round one. And that's a round where there was a lot of inactivity around. I guess I scored for Michael Page. And that came up being a real pivotal round because, like, I definitely had it 2-2 looking at the four rounds. Like, because the thing was, like, Paul Daly was getting the wrestling in, but it was all about the way Michael Page, and I can't even remember which rounds are which.
Well, I mean, this is a thing, Daniel, and we've talked about this multiple times, is we are a sport that we value a takedown just like we value a knockdown.
Yeah, which is nuts. I mean, it's...
And to me, it's what Michael Page... What was a, you know, I gave him that fifth round just more because of, I thought the more offense that he landed as opposed to what Paul Daly did. But I mean, look, it's when you take off 5 minutes, I mean, it's kind of tough to sit there. And I talked to somebody after the fight and I said, how do you score the first round? I said, would you score that 10-10 round? And they said, no. And I said, okay, well, why is that? And they said, well, you know, Page landed punches, Paul Daly didn't, and Paul Daly was on his, you know, was on his heels the entire round. So you got to give it to Michael Page, and I think it's another part of the MMA judging where two 10-9 rounds are not always the same in terms of actually what happened in the fight. But it's I will say this: I on press row sitting right in front of me on Saturday night was Douglas Lima. I have to imagine inside Douglas Lima had to have the biggest smile going because if Paul Daly could take Michael Page down with ease, what is Douglas Lima going to do?
That's a hell of a long-term point, isn't it? That's a hell of a long-term takeaway. If Paul Daly was able to be the better wrestler, Paul Daly, you line up the welterweights and you line up who you're scared of taking you down. Paul Daly's real low on the list. He's definitely no Logan Storley. And it's a great point. I think Douglas Lima is a – I think watching this fight, it's hard not to think Douglas Lima beats Michael Page. But that being said, I mean, Michael Page, the thing I really liked about him was the grappling aspects, the striking, the idea that he can steal fights. He can steal rounds with just his crazy influx of offense. And also, the stand-up and the movement was – effective. It wasn't the most exciting in the world, but it did feel like for Michael Page, there aren't very many guys on this Bellator welterweight roster that he can't stand with and be the superior fighter, which is a heck of an accomplishment moving forward. But when it comes to wrestling guys who are better wrestlers, and also will do a much better job of doing offense from the top position, and also a much better job of keeping the fight there and being defensive. That's going to spell trouble. Douglas Lima, I think, is going to be a poor matchup. Douglas Lima is obviously one of the best guys. And moving forward, I think you're looking at Douglas Lima advancing. But, man, Michael Page and Paul Daly, you know, this is a fight that really didn't live up to the hype. It was an okay fight. The other thing is, like, to complain about the decision is to me, stupid. If you're – I don't know. I don't like it when managers complain about close decisions or fights that are close. It just feels unrealistic.
I think also probably part of that frustration with Ali is the fact that he represents Vitaly Minnikov. And Minnikov, you know, lost a close decision when the 30-27 scorecard I thought was awful. But we'll get to that momentarily. You know, I think the thing with Michael Page, and he was asked this after the fight. Basically, he was asked, like, hey, are you going to go somewhere else where you have, you know, more high-skilled wrestlers? And he kind of said, basically said no, which I think Michael Page probably it would benefit him a lot to get around a team. Maybe it's like an AKA. You know, it wouldn't be American Top Team just because Douglas Lima, you know, is, you know, his gym is an American Top Team gym there in the Atlanta area. But the other thing that really stuck out about Michael Page, I forget whether it was in the fourth or fifth round where he was on the back of Paul Daly. And I think it said a lot about maybe his skill level when it comes to jiu-jitsu. Because to me, I think a lot of guys would have locked in that rear naked and it would have been over and he just couldn't do it. And but I do think one of the things you did see in that fifth round was Page was a fresher fighter and he got the job done and he moves on. And, you know, look, I think if you're Douglas Lima, you're sitting there and you're feeling pretty good about yourself right now. Because it was interesting because right before the main event started, it was either before the main event, maybe even before the main card. I think they were trying to get Douglas Lima to give his pick for social media, and he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame. So I'm like, you're sitting there going, man, you guys are trying to paint me in a corner here to use this as a clip to lead up to the fight. But by the way, you know, May 11th, that's a co-main event. Lima, MVP, main event. Patricio Pitbull, Michael Chandler. Oh, I'm going to Chicago for that one.
It's a great card. It really is. This one, hell of a 1-2 lineup, and I cannot wait for it.
You've got AJ McKee versus Pat Curran. I mean, that's a great featherweight. I'm surprised it's not AJ McKee, Henry Corrales. But man, I mean, you know, Pat Curran's had a lot of injury issues. This is a fight they've tried to book in the past. And then Jake Hager's going to be on it. You know, Tyrell Fortune, after his win, said he wanted that fight. And, you know, I asked him, I said, do you think that's realistic that they would give that to you or Jake would accept it? He goes, no. I know it's not going to happen, but
you know, it's never going to happen for like 3 years.
But I will say this: he wants a step up in competition, and I mean, he's now 6-0. I mean, he rolled through his opponent, and you know, to me, a couple of names that kind of really jumped out to me, and I'll get your take on him is either Javi Ayala, your boy, or Tim Johnson.
That's a good one. I think you go with either one. I think the Tim Johnson fight is probably where you would want to go. I mean, Tyrell Fortune definitely needs to step up. I mean, he's not going to get the Jake Hager fight because Jake Hager shouldn't be fighting anyone good for like 3 years. Like, I think a Tim Johnson fight makes sense. I mean, Tyrell Fortune certainly, he comes in, he dominates, he's well skilled, and I think it's about time you feed him a lower level heavyweight. I mean, you know, get a win over Tim Johnson. I mean, Tyrell Fortune can kind of put Rocket on his back and you can move him up. I mean, it's not unrealistic if he gets through a guy like Tim Johnson, if he gets through a guy like Javi Ayala. I mean, based on what we saw Saturday, it's not unrealistic to think he can go in the cage and beat someone with the name value like Roy Nelson or Mirko Krokop. Because the cool thing is, if you're like a young heavyweight, Bellator has fighters with name value who are really past their prime. So you can kind of use that name value to elevate your career.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, this past weekend, we had two heavyweight prospects on Bellator, Fortune and Steve Mowry, who fought on Friday. You know, Steve Mowry, he went through opponent change. My understanding is his team really wanted the Tony Lopez fight. Mike Mazzulli ended up turning down the fight because, you know, Tony Lopez has got, you know, like 90-plus fights. And Steve Mowry ends up fighting a man making his pro debut who was 10-0-1 and won no contest as an amateur. And Darion Abbey gave Steve Mowry everything he can handle. Mowry nearly gets defeated, but ends up getting a submission win in the opening round. So we saw kind of two different stages of prospects of where Fortune is, and maybe in comparison where Steve Mowry is. But maybe it's just, you know, Steve Mowry had a bad night, but ultimately gets the win. I mean, you mentioned Mirko Krokop, Roy Nelson. I'll say this, one of the things, of there was a lot of people there supporting Mirko Krokop. You know, Roy Nelson was not happy with the decision. Sounds like he had some choice words for some officials in the cage. And, you know, he wants to run the trilogy fight. No thanks. No thanks. Not interested.
Yeah, man. This card did not have – this weekend wasn't great. I don't want to see Nelson and Krokop again. God, I don't want to see Krokop and Congo. I mean, yeah, Congo.
I got the fight for Krokop. You know the fight they got to do.
Krokop versus Fedor?
Yes. You can put that fight in Russia. You can put that fight in Croatia, Japan, anywhere in the U.S. To me, and someone asked me, they said, what do you think is the biggest box office fight that Bellator can make in terms of television viewership? And to me, it is Fedor versus Krokop.
Man, I really wish I could sit down and do some math and provide you with another example, but
okay, like you're Chandler
right.
Pitbull.
I think you're right.
Chandler Pitbull is an unbelievable fight.
Oh, yeah,
I don't care what is going on that side. I'll be in Chicago anyway, but if I was sitting here in my home in Tampa, I'm making sure I am in front of my television. I've got DAZN on, because that event will be exclusive on DAZN, and watching that fight. I mean, I would love to say Chandler Pitbull will draw more television, or we won't know because it's on DAZN. But to me, in terms of casual eyeballs, Fedor versus Krokop, totally is a fight to make. Scott Coker got asked about this in the post-fight press conference, and, you know, Scott never really tips his hand, but it was very clear, like, you know, hey, if Fedor wants to fight, maybe we'll see if that's something that interests him, which to me told me, you know, my perception is the conversation's already been had.
Yeah, Fedor should be in legend fights. Maybe Fedor versus Rampage, maybe we'll do bigger views.
Yeah, but you could literally, because they've been talking about, like, this retirement tour for Fedor. I mean, you look at Krokop, Rampage, that's an excellent name. I think that's a fight that would bring, you know, who the third fight be?
Well, look, here's the fight that I want to see happen in life. I want to see Fedor fight Brock Lesnar.
It'll never happen.
Is Fedor a free agent?
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, it might happen. I mean, to me, that's a, I don't know. I just want to see those two fight. But Fedor versus Krokop, I'll be fine with, because, like, obviously, it's the retirement tour. Fedor is not the same Fedor. He's still skilled, and I think he'll beat Krokop. I think he'll beat guys like that. And to see that fight in Russia or in another European country or an Asian country, I'm down for. So, yeah, man, this fight sucked, but moving forward, like when you're in attendance, what was it like watching a guy like Krokop, a legend of the sport, kind of walk to the Bellator cage? Because, I mean, this guy, you know, the fight wasn't great. It was close enough to not really care about which way the decision went. But it's still cool, right, to see a guy like Krokop
totally.
Fight?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, I never had the opportunity to see Krokop fight in person before. And, yeah, look, it was just you saw how the fans gravitated towards him. And, you know, the other thing I found really interesting is, you remember when he was supposed to fight in London last year, about how everyone was up in arms about that fight? You know, did you notice there was no talk about his whole USADA thing all week? And like, I also saw this, and, you know, I reported last night that the out-of-competition drug tests for Bellator 215, 216 did come back, all come back clean. Krokop was one of them. And, you know, and one of the responses was like, oh, I wonder what kind of drug test they actually gave him. I'm like, it's the same drug test USADA uses, folks.
Yeah.
I don't understand it, Daniel, of why people have the view of Bellator drug tests that they do. Like, do they really think that Mike Mazzulli is looking the other way?
That's a great question, why? And I can't provide you the answer other than the legacy of sport is that whenever you're not the number one, your drug testing is at a lower level than the number one.
Now, here's the reality, is no one cares about clean drug tests. No one cares about those stories. And I can tell you this as someone who's written those stories, tweeted those stories, no one cares. But if you have a failed drug test, magically everyone cares. I mean, I've said this. There is more drug testing going on in Bellator than people realize. It's just because the commissions don't automatically come out and say it. It's nowhere near what USADA is, but there is more drug testing going on than what people realize. I mean, you got to understand is Mike Mazzulli regulates all the international events. Folks, there's drug testing on all of those events. Andy Foster, he's drug testing every time Bellator comes to California. Like, I guess it's that whole perception versus reality thing.
Yeah, I mean, the last guy to fail was the Muscle Shark guy, right?
Yeah, Blair Tugman tested positive last year, who was an undercard fighter for Bellator. Nothing. I mean, you haven't had a notable, fighter under a long-term contract with Bellator pop yet.
Yeah, which is like, the thing is, you're constantly putting out the reports of when the test happened, or as many as you can get, at least, right? Like, you're constantly asking it, and you see the tweets, and yeah, it's not going to go viral if you report that Eduardo Dantas tested, had a good test. No, he came back clean.
That was an awful fight, too, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, most of these fights were awful. Like to me, you either had a really impressive like finish or a bad fight, or we'll get to it in a little bit. But a guy getting a hand of the ding dong. But I mean, God, Kongo Minikov, that one sucked too, man.
That was bad. Great post fight scrum with Chet Kongo. I think it literally lasted 90 seconds, where he basically said, "Ryan Bader, fight me your hand over the belt," which it was a good line. Amosov gets the win over Eric Silva. Eric Silva looked good in the opening round, but then of course gets taken down, and that was it. Valle Laredo, she gets the win over Colby Fletcher. I do want to mention this tweet that she had, where she says, "Want to know a secret? The commission almost didn't let me fight because of my eyelash extensions." That's fake news, folks, because I talked to the commission about it and was told that's not true. What she was told was basically because she had her eyelash extensions in, if that caused her to get an eye injury, she would lose the fight. So that's what happened there. In the prelims on Saturday night, Sumter Felix was by far the best fight of the weekend. Those two guys went at it. Sumter, you can actually watch my interview with him right now on theamireport.com, where he talked about getting dropped and kind of everything that led on with that. He mentioned about Tyrell Fortune. Vinicius de Jesus is somebody to pay attention to. He got a TKO win, a welterweight. Those was really the highlights of Saturday. With in terms of Friday, the first five fights on the prelims were awesome. I mean, just action-packed, going out there. Congratulations to Pete Rogers Jr. Of course, I do a DFS show. He got a TKO win. Billy Goff, who was a big ticket seller, he got a win there. Austin Vanderford, had a chance to talk to him. Super nice guy. He goes out there, he did what you expected him to do in that fight. John Duma upsets Mike Kimball. I know a lot of people will say that it's quote-unquote an upset, but I wasn't surprised that happened. I actually did an interview with John Duma yesterday. I'm going to have that up on theamireport.com today to hear some interesting conversation with him. Logan Storley gets the win over Ian Pascu. Logan Storley just showed his dominating wrestling. I mean, that's what he did. And, of course, the main event, Sergey and Matt Mitrione. Did you watch this live or via DVR?
DVR.
So when the kick happened and Sergey went down, Garrett Davies was right next to me, and he said, "This fight's probably over." And when he wasn't getting up, I'm like, "Yep, this fight's over." I mean, man. And then, of course, they had to replay it in the venue like five times.
Well, when the main event only goes 15 seconds, you gotta entertain the crowd. You gotta show them what happened.
Don't worry, there were some fans behind Press Row that thought they should get in there and start fighting Matt Mitrione.
Really, they were so angry because of
you think about it, is that main card on Friday night, the first two fights were awesome between Vanderford Jones and Duma and Kimball. Then after that, it went downhill. I mean, Dantas, Dantas, look, a clear win. I mean, crowd was booing the fight pretty much from middle of the first round on. You know, and I thought Dontas fought safe in the third round. I thought like he wasn't taking any chances. You know, Storley, I mean, look, it was a dominating effort. I had someone basically say to me that they're like, Jason, respect your opinion, but, you know, he was fighting a scrub. I'm like, Pascu's a scrub? Really? Like, if that's your definition of a scrub, I would love to know what your definition of a tomato can is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. Pascu is solid. Storley is just a hell of a wrestler. I mean, yeah, Vanderford, you mentioned it. He's the one who looked good for sure. And then Duma's win was cool. Like, crazy deja vu scenario for Mike Kimble, where he found himself in a triangle choke and he just couldn't slam his way out of it. But, yeah, no. So, saying Storley is a scrub, I don't know. Man, Dontas, though, he did get the win, but it was. I don't think he'll ever get back to where he was after a performance like that. It's just he didn't look to me like a Bellator bantamweight championship caliber fighter.
No, I mean, I wonder would Dantas try to get in that featherweight tournament?
I think it's a 16-man tournament, right? So
yeah,
I think that would be a great ask for sure. Because the thing is, like, that tournament's gonna be great starting in the second round. I don't know if there's 16 quality names, but Dontas would definitely be like a name you could add in there.
I wonder if 16 is too much.
I think it is, actually. I think it is. Just because the expectation of that amount of fights going off without a hitch is a bad idea. That's my general takeaway. So that's my general takeaway. Things could happen. Guys could get in the gonads and they could, you know, they could be put out with a hemorrhoid, apparently. I'm excited for it, though, for sure. But, yeah, man, fight card wasn't great. What's it like when you are in a crowd where the main event, the fight people are there to see last 15 seconds, it ends in groin shot? Like, what is the atmosphere like?
Disappointment. You got to imagine, like, you know, you think about what if you were that fan that said, I came to watch Mitrione and Karatanov. I'm not buying tickets to Saturday. And that's what you got.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It's like a roll of the dice every time event.
Like, this is the thing. Like, and I think Bellator's got to, you know, kind of has to do an evaluation here. That Connecticut market is a boxing market. I just don't think it's smart to put in a fighter like Logan Storley in the co-main event. Look, it's a dominating performance by Logan Storley, but those fans don't want to sit there and see two guys wrestle for 15 minutes. They don't.
Yeah, it's a good point. But to be honest with you, there aren't a whole lot of markets other than maybe Oklahoma you could put that fight on.
I'm telling you, you know the fight I want to see with Logan Storley?
Which one?
Ed Roof.
Put that in a wrestling town. And
you do that either on the campus of Penn State or the campus of the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's a hell of a pool. It's a hell of a I would absolutely love to see that, and I think you put it on a campus like that, the people are going to go crazy for it.
Yeah, and Logan, he didn't call out Ed Ruth after the fight was over. It got brought up about because someone asked a question like, "Hey, you know, Logan, you said how you're the best wrestler in Bellator, and what?" It was basically like, "Who do you think's number two?" And he's like, "Well, who do you think?" And someone said Ryan Bader, and then someone else said Ed Ruth. And he's like, "Well, you know, I wrestled Ed 8 years ago, but I was 18 years old." And I'm like, I'm sitting here and he's going on and like he's talking for like 3 or 4 minutes about Ed Ruth. And I'm sitting there going, "Oh, if I am Scott Coker and Rich Chow and Mike Kogan, I'm hearing this. Ooh, that's a fight that I don't think you do that next. I think you build up to that."
I think so too.
Get a win for Ed. Maybe two more wins, and then you can really build those guys up as, like, say, two top 10, five-ish, you know, or not, should I say top five? Top 10 welterweights in Bellator.
Definitely. And an important part is I love the idea of doing that fight in a college campus. I mean, make your fighters seem like big deals. The Strikeforce, I mean, Bellator does a great job of doing that anyway. But for sure, I mean, put that fight in front of a crowd that's really going to appreciate what they're watching.
Yeah, but of course, I got back to Tampa on Sunday afternoon and did get home in time for UFC on ESPN1. And, you know, overall, it was a pretty good fight card. Obviously, kind of a, you know, in a way, a weird ending there with Ngannou getting a knockout win against Cain Velasquez. And, It's and I tweeted this after the fights were over. It's going to be really interesting to see what the UFC does at the top half of the heavyweight division, the top echelon of the heavyweight division. And one of the ways I wanted to talk about this is, if Brock Lesnar is not next for Daniel Cormier, who's his next opponent? Ngannou, Miocic, or Jones?
It's a good question. If it's not Brock Lesnar, I think, man, Dan was real sour on Ngannou, and I get why. Like, he came in and he ran through a legend. He ran through a Hall of Famer in Cain Velasquez. I mean, Cain looked bad in 26 seconds for sure. It looked like it'd been a while since he fought.
Oh, man, Cain, it's just, you just wonder how much of this is just his body has just deteriorated on him. All the years of competition and all the injuries he's had, that his body's just breaking down.
That, to me, is the narrative after this fight. So Francis looks great, but I don't think he's next. Dana was kind of sour on the topic. I mean, for Ngannou, I mean, the way you look at it is, man, that fight he had where it was him and freaking Derek Lewis, and the fight was just so bad. It got so much stink on Ngannou. One by one, the win over Blades, the win over Velasquez, it's eliminating the odor that has been accompanying him since that fight, but it's still not gone. You can kind of still get a whiff of that performance, and it was so bad that it's going to probably take another fight. So I think you're looking at Stipe or Jones. Obviously, Jones is fighting Anthony Smith. Watching the sport for a while, the Jones-Anthony Smith fight, that one really shocked me when it was announced, because my general rule of thumb is, spoiler alert, the fight that draws the most money is the one that happens. That's how it works. And the fact that they're wasting a Jones fight on Anthony Smith instead of having him fight Cormier is something that I was surprised by, kind of pleasantly, because Anthony Smith's the rightful contender. But
you got the Cormier regardless. Injury, though. I mean, that you know, yeah. It's just like, so, I don't know.
I think Cormier Jones' next fight is the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're like me. Like, I understand. Look, I think Stipe Miocic should get a rematch, but there's got to come a point where, Stipe, man, you got to realize you're not getting this, and you got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's like, how long can he sit on the sidelines just waiting and hoping he's going to get that rematch?
Look, rematches are awarded to people based on opportunity, based on name value, and based on what's going on in the context of the sport. So the context is almost right for Stipe in that there aren't a whole lot of interesting challengers. But he doesn't have the name value to warrant immediate rematches. And the fight wasn't a back-and-forth five-round war. It was Cormier knocking him out in the first round. So at some point, it feels like, you know, it's almost like a rematch with Ngannou is what may happen for Stipe.
I got a question for you about Cain Velasquez.
What's that?
Buy or sell, Cain Velasquez fights for UFC heavyweight title again.
Oh, sell it with – yeah, I don't even know if he fights again.
No, this is a thing that I did not realize about Cain Velasquez. You realize he's 36 years old and he turns 37 in July?
I thought he was 34.
I thought when I heard someone mention that the other day, I was like, really? He's that old? Joe Riggs is younger.
That's nuts.
Joe Riggs is the youngest 33-year-old guy in the world.
Yo, Joe Riggs is
32 or 33?
I'm pretty sure. Man, he's been 33 for 5 years. He's 36. He's 36.
Is he 36?
Yeah. Who am I thinking? That's fake news, Jason. I mean, look, Joe Riggs has definitely been a perennial young guy.
Okay, like, Joe Riggs
he started fighting in 2001.
Yeah, he turns 37 this year as well. But yeah, I think it's, you know, you had an interesting comment to me about Cain and the WWE. Because I tell you, his scrum last week in Phoenix, or I don't know if he did in Phoenix, maybe LA, where he was talking to the media, it was the most laid back I thought we've seen Cain ever doing media. And I thought it was very fascinating how open and would appear to be honest about his love for the WWE and what he did when he went to the performance center.
Yeah, I think Cain Velasquez is going to fight in the WWE before he fights in the UFC. I mean, he may fight again.
You mentioned this, and I think it's a great conversation. What happens first? Brock fights in the UFC, or Cain Velasquez has a match in the WWE?
It's a tough one. I think it's going to be Cain in the WWE, but the most important point for this Brock Lesnar timeline is going to happen in April, as we have WrestleMania, which, you know, is like when his contract usually ends. So that's like the important part, is like things could escalate real quickly after WrestleMania or before. I think it just announced the fight. But if I had if there was a gun to my head, I would tell you I think a Cain Velasquez WWE wrestling match happens first, because it seems like he's more committed to doing that. Whereas Brock, I think, has just used the UFC as leverage. He's already getting up there in age. And so, I mean, Cain, the only thing for his wrestling career is, God, his body's so worn out from fighting as a fighter. To transition to wrestling is a very difficult task. But he's a hell of an athlete, so it might work out. But bad night for Cain, great night for Ngannou.
By the way, have you seen that GIF rolling around on Twitter of Ronda Rousey whiffing on a punch in WWE?
I saw that live. Yeah, that was bad.
Dude, man.
I didn't know that was going viral.
I watch it every once in a while, but I saw that GIF come across my timeline. I was like, ooh, that's bad. That's bad. Like, he wasn't even close.
Hey, man, when you're out there wrestling for 20 minutes or 10, you know, you're going to make a mistake.
How much is that with her opponent?
100%. No, that's on her opponent. Because at the end of the day, you got
to
make sure.
She's so scared of Ronda's power. She had to move out of the way. So scared.
Yeah. You can't sell a move if it doesn't hit you, is my man. Because then we live in a day and age where a thing goes viral and that's all they see. And it's like, gosh darn it. You work so hard. And yeah, moral of the story. And also, she shouldn't be scared of Ronda's power. I mean, come on.
No.
Come on. I mean, you know, she's no Valerie Laredo. I'll tell you that much.
In terms of manpower, fight of the weekend. Vicente Luque and Brian Barberena. Holy cow, what a fight that was. I mean, it is leader in the clubhouse for fight of the year. First off, good Lord, the chin Brian Barberena has on him. Holy cow.
It was almost like Luque like hit him in the chin a couple of times. He's like, this isn't working. I should just wait him out. It was weird. It was a great fight.
Like, you would love to know what was going on in Luque's head at that moment of like, what the hell do I got to hit this guy with?
Yeah, Brian Barberena is a madman. I mean, look, simply put, guys, if you haven't watched any fights this weekend, I would implore you to watch this one. You got to make up some time for it. Vicente Luque, Brian Barberena was a great fight. It wowed the crowd. Brian Barberena is crazy. Luque is pretty crazy too, but he did a good job of like defending the punches when he kind of became a little more conservative in that second round. The connections on Brian, though, were so crazy, and he was able to survive up until the last, you know, few seconds he got knocked out. But a hell of a fight, guys. Like, you have to watch this one.
Yeah, that's a fight. I mean, literally, if you've seen it, you want to go back and watch it again. It was just an awesome fight. And Cron Gracie looked very good, got to the ground, does what he does. I'm interested to kind of see how the UFC match makes him, because I think you do got to kind of be a little bit smart on his aspect. Manny Bermudez looked good on the preliminary card. He got another submission win. The sad moment of the card definitely is Hannah Burrell.
Yeah. Early prelims, ESPN Plus, Sanders knocks him out. Bad stuff for Hannah. Hannah looked good in the first round.
By the way, best
against
part,
Luke Sanders.
Best part What's about that? These ESPN broadcasts, you know what they are?
Quick.
No going back to the desk. We just show fights.
That I love.
Oh, man,
sure.
it's such an enjoyable product to watch on ESPN. Like, such enjoyable.
Yeah, the one thing is, like, I feel like it's a tough one because you want as many fights as possible on ESPN for sure. And you see the rate, I think it was like 1.1 or something like that, maybe a little higher.
Yeah, I don't think the actual – yeah, it's – I saw the ESPN press release where it was basically like these cards that have aired on ESPN this year are now the three most watched cable MMA events since 2017.
Which is like, it's not that impressive. Like, the numbers for MMA events on cable have been really bad the past 2 years.
No. I mean, look, and I'm a firm believer that I think it's the way these cards have paced, I think has been a major reason for that. I'm a big believer in that.
The biggest reason is 100% the lead-ins for some of these events. I mean, the past two, not this one didn't have a lead-in, but the last two had a big-time college basketball game. I guess the biggest reason is people want to watch the UFC. But the one thing I will say is when you have, let's see, was it? It was 10 fights on ESPN, 10 fights, two different blocks of the prelims and the main card. I think not just having a 1, 2, or 3 hour block for the main card and nothing before it kind of hurts the UFC rating a little bit because, like, I just feel like if you provide only big name main cards on ESPN, your rating could go way higher. But if you have someone who turns on the UFC and they see Nick Lentz in the cage with Scott Holtzman or Andrea Lee in the cage with Ashley Evans Smith, I think people will change the channel or they won't be a point of viewing. But at the end of the day, if you have the opportunity to put fights on ESPN, you do it.
By the way, I just pulled up the television ratings from Friday night. So Bellator in the top 150 came in 81st.
That's really bad, man.
365,000 viewers. Now, look, I think you have to note this, and I was talking with somebody in Bellator about this on Thursday, is while, yes, this is what the ratings are, but you know, I think the question that we just don't know is how many people are watching on DAZN. Look, I am someone, when I am at home, how I view the Bellator product is via DAZN because I don't have traditional cable or satellite. I've got YouTube TV, so I don't have Paramount. I think they need to go to FS1. I think that's where they should be.
I agree with you. I think that's the right move. Paramount is just not the place to be for them. I mean,
they just don't fit each other. I mean, at the end of the day, they just what Paramount is and what Bellator is two different things. I mean, it's just, by the way, got to mention Aljamain Sterling, man. Impressive win over Jimmy Rivera as well.
Yeah, that was a big-time fight for sure, man. That was a big-time fight, and Aljamain really sent Rivera down the ranks there, and he got a big win, and we had that one bookmarked. Cynthia Calvillo got, like, a close win over Courtney Casey. Not the greatest fight in the world for her. The fans are disappointed because they like Casey, and then Paul Felder looked good, too, against James Vick.
Yeah, he's been in the hospital with a collapsed lung.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's gonna be, you know, he was actually supposed to call the Prague event, and his manager Brian Beller said, "Yeah, that's not happening anymore." So yeah, it was overall kind of a rough weekend in MMA. Obviously Luque and Barbarina made up for it, but we do got Bellator and the UFC this weekend. We're going to preview those cards here momentarily, but up next you're going to hear my conversations that I recently had with three fighters. The first two interviews you're going to hear are two fighters that will be part of UFC 235 next week, Marlon Chito Vera and Cody Stamann. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Nate Smith, who is a prospect out of Factory X Muay Thai. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man's got a new opponent for UFC 235. And the last time we talked to him, he mentioned about targeting a fight against Frankie Saenz. It is Marlon Chito Vera. Marlon, man, I appreciate the time. I mean, look, you hate to see an injury happen to Thomas Almeida, but you've got the fight you now wanted in Frankie Saenz.
Yeah, of course. You know, it sucks when you get the call and they tell you, like, your opponent pulled out, there's no fight. So that hurt me, it's bad, but anyways, they found a quick replacement, so I was happy with the fight. And honestly, it's not like I want to fight the guy. It's not like I want that specific fight. When I called him out before, it's because I checked the roster, I asked other managers who have a fight, and the guy was free, so it's not like I want to fight him. I don't have a problem with the guy. I just want to fight. And then if somebody called me out, that would be amazing. I would call my manager. The guy called me out. I would try to reach to his manager. Hey, you know what? Let's talk to the chef. Let's put some spice. But let's get the deal done before, you know, that just goes away. So I feel he thinks it's against him. And for me, it's just about make money and just fight. So I feel the call out is a good part of the game.
With the change in opponent, did that change kind of how your preparations for this fight went, or was it just kind of very minor?
It changed a little bit. You know, this guy's more like a guy who throws big hooks with wrestling, and he always grind people out. In the other side, with Almeida, was like a more clean kickboxer with power. So at the end of the day, we got a scrap. At the end of the day, sometimes the game plan don't go as planned, so you got to fight. So I don't focus too much like on the styles. I focus more on myself, be right in the ground, be right in the wrestling, and be right in the stand-up, and, you know, go from there and then fight hard and be in the best shape I can be, because that's the only thing I can control.
I use that analogy all the time. You can only worry about those things that you can control. In terms of the preparations of this training camp in comparison to others, you know, how would you say this camp has gone different as opposed to, you know, say your previous two camps?
I feel I'm just getting more experience. I'm getting more confident there. I'm learning from every camp, and I just feel good about this preparation. I feel my coaches put in a good work. I feel my teammates are there to help me, and as I was there before when they have fights. And for me, it's more about being healthy, doing the right thing, and find ways to be better and healthier, and that's it for me.
Hearing what you're saying there about, you know, finding ways to be healthier, is that kind of the after practice is over of finding different ways to kind of get the body what it needs to do to recover?
Yeah, of course, get a better recovery. I'm always making research. I'm always reading and learning about food and what type of health foods will help me with recovery. Like, it's crazy sometimes how you learn how to mix some food and that will be anti-inflammatory, how you get some vitamins that give you more energy. Like, it's crazy how much info it's out there, and how much, like, you know, fasting, ketosis, and those things will help you just to feel better, to, you know, promote better energy, and just feel better with yourself. And I'm always learning more. I'm always checking more on my diet, on my recovery, on my longevity. And for me, that's like that's what keep my mind out of the fight game. You know, learn how to be a better athlete, a better body. And then I'm mixing some stuff. I feel better. So I'm like, I check it out with my wife, and then I'm like, hey, let's try this, let's try that. Talk to my nutritionist. And I feel that's the way to be healthy, because let's be real, we take punches in the head often. We're breaking up our body a lot. So I feel like if we don't have those stuff, it's going to be bad for us. You know, make sure we're eating the right thing for that will help our brain and some specific organs to be healthier. So I feel that's what I do. And in the RSI, just trying as hard as I can, be better and put in good performances.
I mean, you've been in the UFC since 2014. I mean, how would you say you look at the fight game differently now as opposed to back when you entered?
Well, before I used to be more, you know, just do whatever, like more ignorant in the diet-wise. It was just like, oh, train hard when the fight's coming in, add some veggies. But then when you start learning more, you figured out that you cannot eat as a regular person. You cannot train as a regular person. You have to do it professional. You gotta learn and put some science in your training, tell your coaches what you want. And at the end of the day, this is a selfish sport, and I gotta make it about me, because my family don't eat of me being nice. My family eat of me winning fights. So it's a selfish sport. But of course, on the other hand, you gotta find the balance and help who's next to you. So I try to keep the balance, but as I say, at the end of the day, I have to make it for me and my family.
How do you find that balance between preparing for a fight but also being a father?
Oh, well, I just try to, in my day off, I try to have a good sleep the night before, and the rest of the day I try to give it to my family. You know, there's no way I can sleep the whole day and tell my family, like, hey, get away from me. I have to be there. So it's just depending on or where I am in camps. And anyways, be out with my kids and family you know, take my mind out of the fight, because this is very stressful. You're always thinking like, I'm doing enough or whatever. That's why I also have a mind coach that helped me keeping my shit together. And but anyways, family always give you that balance, you know, having my kids around. Last night I went to the movies with my kid, and today I just have a great day. So I just feel like this for me is not, it's all about fighting, but at the same time it's not all about fighting, because at the end of the day I do it for one reason. That reason is my family. So what's the point to be all time just thinking and fighting if my home is a bad place? I try to make my home a great place so I can train hard, no problem.
Yeah, I was actually seeing on your Instagram feed, you went and saw Spider-Man. Did you like it?
Dude, it was awesome movie. So one of my first time, like, the movie was awesome. And I was like, I don't think it's that cool, because the real Peter Parker, like the real life movie, it was cool. But when they changed the actual actor, for me, those movies were shit. But then when they put this movie was actually awesome. Like, I was probably more excited than my kid, but my kid was actually pretty excited. He bring his Spider-Man hat, his toy. So we had a good time. The movie was very cool.
Growing up, were you was Spider-Man one of the go-to comics that maybe you read or watch?
It was more about watch the movie. I'm not into comics and books, but I'm a movie person, so I'm always watching movies, and I'm always looking forward to new movies. So yeah, I think that's my team, watch movies.
But of course, you've got the fight here, UFC 235. What do you see as your key to victory against Frankie Saenz?
Of course, you know, it's something that I said before, the age. I'm young. I feel I will be stronger, faster. But of course, I won't, just because those fights, I will take it. I will take the fight easier, you know. Like, I will go in there, I will fight hard, and I will just make sure I'm prepared to go, because sometimes people people take it easy, like, oh, just because I'm younger, I'm stronger, I will beat the guy. And then you forget about it. That guy in front of you is going to try to take your head off, and then shit happens. So in my head, this is as hard as the last fight, and it's going to be as hard as an Almeida fight. So I don't take it easy. Like, I never take a fight easy. But I know for a fact, a 40-year-old man cannot keep it up with me. And then I'm experienced. I have a lot of fights in the UFC. I've been there with better guys, bigger guys. So it's just about keeping all together. Don't get out of the game plan. Don't do stupid stuff in there. And I will put him out within two rounds.
And we look forward to seeing this UFC 235, of course, taking place in Las Vegas, headlined by John Jones and Anthony Smith. Also got Tyron Woodley, Kamaru Usman, jam-packed card taking place there in Vegas. Chito, as always, man, appreciate the time. Let her know they can find you on social media and, of course, those sponsors that help support you.
Thanks, everybody, for the support. First of all, I'm grateful for the people who support the sport and support me in this case. My social media, haven't changed in a while. Chito Vera UFC, Twitter, Instagram, and yeah, I try to post a lot of my training and my lifestyle. So if you guys are into the healthy stuff, follow me, because I post all my food and stuff like that. And if you guys, to my sponsors, to the people who support me, you know, GTS Kombucha, Siete Foods, Oni, Citizen Water, all the people that support me. I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting about one or two. But, you know, I will post it on my social media anyway. So thanks, everybody, for the support. Milk Connect, provide all my food. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you, brother, for this time talking.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to be fighting here just a couple of weeks, UFC 235, Cody Stamann, as he is stepping in to take on Alejandro Perez. A couple weeks out, I know I was listening to an interview today, said, hey, I've been training, let's go. You mentioned about, hey, you were already in preparations. I know that it's a busy week for you. Not only you started kind of that preparations on Perez, but you got all these guys fighting on Saturday at Lights Out Championship. So kind of, man, how are you balancing your schedule of getting ready for your fight, but also helping out your teammates?
Man, it's been busy. It's been really busy at the gym. Everyone's fighting. But that's you know, that's how I like it. I like to stay busy. I like when all the guys on my team are kind of in that competition mode. It makes things a lot easier and smoother for me to transition into, you know, having a fight on about 4 weeks' notice. But honestly, I've been consistently training for probably 4 or 5 months now. I was just preparing myself for any short notice opportunity that came up. I really thought I was going to get that Lineker fight in January. Unfortunately, I didn't. But, you know, I think it all worked out because this is a great, great matchup for me and a great opportunity to mark second on a really, really big card.
It's been a while since we saw you. I know that interview with James you talked about, there just been so many opportunities just didn't come together. And, you know, I thought the most interesting thing you said is, hey, I finally got a contract, which is ultimately the kind of thing for you. How would you describe the past couple months?
Well, it's been crazy. You know, my manager's been doing an awesome job. Jason Hall's been doing an awesome job of, you know, plugging me for just about every fight opportunity possible. You know, I'm a fighter. I like to fight. And being that I'm coming off a loss, you know, I really wanted to get back in there and kind of get this behind me and get back to moving forward and kind of where I saw myself to be, you know, had I won that last fight. So it's a crazy whirlwind. This sport, you know, will say, if I could say one thing, is that I'm never ever bored or lacking some kind of like big life altering decision when it comes to my fighting career. MMA is an absolute roller coaster ride, and I really couldn't imagine my life being any other way. I love it.
Second pro loss, you know, this loss snapped a 10-fight winning streak. How is it different this time getting over the defeat as opposed to the last time?
Well, last time was a lot different. Last time it was a really close split decision that, you know, I think myself and, you know, I think everyone I've ever talked to that watched the fight said, you know, this is, you really got screwed. And I did. I really did get screwed. I'm not just saying that because, you know, I'm biased for myself. That's just the truth. But this fight, obviously, I got finished. Something that hasn't happened since I was an amateur. You know, I've had 41 cage fights, and I've won 38 of them. So I was 19-1 as an amateur. I'm 17-2 as a pro. I'm used to winning. I train to win. But with that being said, you know, I think every single time I've lost, like last time I had that split decision loss, I won 10 straight after that. Decisively, I lost, you know, one or two rounds in 10 fights. So, losing does something to me mentally, that I feel like is almost a good thing. As much as it hurt, as much as it sucks, as much as I'll think about it till the day I die, I really think that for me, like, taking a loss, isn't a bad thing, just because, I'm not one of those guys that pouts and stays on the ground and has a hard time getting back up after a loss. Like, I was ready to get back in the gym the next day. Obviously, I had a little bit of a knee injury, so I had to take a couple of weeks off. But it hasn't done anything but motivate me to want to be better and to be more critical on what I'm doing and to be more organized, I mean, in every single aspect of the fight game.
Was it tough to have to take a couple of weeks off from being in the gym with the boys?
Yeah, it was. It was. You know, even when I'm not in a fight camp, I'm at the gym every day. So for me, it's just what I do. You know, like, you know, 5:30 rolls around, like I'm going to the gym, and then, you know, in the morning I wake up, I'm going to the gym. It's what I do every day, regardless of whether I have a fight or not. So definitely had to do some other stuff to keep myself busy. Luckily, you know, that fell right in the middle of hunting season, so. I'm an avid duck and goose hunter, so I got to do some duck and goose hunting, which was nice. But you know, my real love and passion is fighting.
And Alejandro Perez, 21-6-1 in his career. Obviously, this is going to be a huge fight card, UFC 235, with the two title fights. What's kind of your thoughts on Alejandro? Just kind of what he offers to the table.
He's good. I mean, he's good. He's 6-1-1 in the UFC, something like that. I've watched a lot of his fights. The couple of fights I thought maybe he didn't win, I would say he's more like 4-4 in the UFC, but no, I don't saw it that way. He's good. He's pretty good everywhere. He's not spectacular anywhere, though, and I think that's really where he's really going to struggle with me, is that the places that he can fight well, I fight better, and the fact that, you know, I'm a much better grappler, much better wrestler. You know, I think I probably have the best double leg in the UFC. There's not, I don't think there's a guy in the bantamweight division that can stop me from double legging their butt, and, you know, Perez is definitely not the guy that's going to stuff my shot. So I think I'm going to be able to kind of dictate what happens in this fight. I think I'm going to be a bigger, more physical guy. And I'm hungry, man. I'm pissed. I got a chip on my shoulder, and now I'm motivated to do everything I have to do to beat the shit out of him March 2nd.
Good chip or bad chip on your shoulder?
I mean, it's a good chip on my shoulder. I'm just hungry, you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited to get to the gym. I'm excited for every aspect. I'm excited to go cut weight. I'm excited to do this stuff. Normally, this stuff, like, this time in a training camp, I'm kind of dreading it. You know, I'm sore. I'm tired. It's like, oh, I got to cut weight now. This sucks. I can't eat. And right now, I'm like, my diet's on point. You know, I probably weigh less than I would, you know, if I had an 8-week training camp, just because I've been keeping my weight lower and I've been more disciplined, you know, outside of fight camp. And I'm just excited to go out there and show people what I've been doing and how hard I've been working.
All right, mention about saying you have the best double leg. So you're number one. Who's got the second best double leg?
I don't know. I'm trying to think who has a really, really good double leg in the UFC. And nobody comes to mind. If you threw some names at me, I might be able to think. I feel like Tyron Woodley's got a pretty good double leg. GSP, but it's not really a double leg. He shoots kind of like a weird single leg. Chad Mendez has a good shot. But mine's a straight blast double leg, and I don't really see anybody in the UFC that, like, uses it the same way I do. I'm, like, literally, like, running guys over. So, I don't know. I really can't think. I mean, Henry Cejudo, but he doesn't shoot double legs. He shoots single legs and a lot of different weird shots, to where, like, me, I'm 100%. I'm going to shoot a double leg on you, and I'm going to finish it. And everybody knows that it's coming. That's my only takedown. I don't shoot anything else, ever. I'm going to shoot a double leg. I'm going to shoot a double leg every single round in Alejandro Perez, and I'm going to take him down every single round. He knows it. He can read this interview. There's no secret. You know what I mean? I'm going to bounce around my feet. I'm going to hit him with kicks and punches, and then I'm going to double leg him. Every time he plants his feet, I'm going to double leg him. I mean, I hope he hears this. I hope he sees this, because he's not going to stop it. It's just no one can. Not at bantamweight.
Do you ultimately feel that because of your takedown ability that it gets into your opponent's head, like they're constantly thinking about it, and then it just opens up something else?
100%. You know, Aljamain Sterling, after our fight, someone sent me an interview of him, and he was saying something about, he was like, I knew he was going to shoot a double leg. You know, I kind of hesitated in the first round. I didn't really want to sit down and throw anything, so I knew he was going to shoot on me. And I took him down 3-4 times in the first round. So, you know, I think even if a guy knows it's coming, 100% knows it's coming, he can't stop it. So that really makes people hesitant. I mean, if you watch, you know, I'm not really even shooting a double leg. I don't want to hold guys on the ground and just wrestle them. Like, I want to hold them, wear them out a little bit, and not just let them up. I don't hold them there. I mean, most of the time I can keep guys on the ground the whole round if I wanted to. But that's not the style of fighting that people want to see, or that, you know, I want to be known for. So for me, it's like I just do it to kind of, you know, get to a dominant position, and it just throws people's games off. Nobody wants to throw hard shots at me. No one wants to plant their feet. And it changes the way people fight. And I see it with everyone, regardless of, you know, whether they have great takedown defense or not. I'm going to get in there and put them on their butt.
You mentioned about Henry Cejudo, and I think we all expect that he's going to be at 35, probably in the more near future than anything else. You know, were you surprised how that fight went with TJ?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I didn't bet on any, like, online sources or anything like that, but I had a lot of running bets with a lot of different people, and I lost my butt on that fight. I really expected TJ to come out a little sharper. TJ looked flat. Henry looked ready. And I think maybe TJ underestimated Henry Cejudo a little bit and was a little too lackadaisy in the beginning of the fight. But I really do think TJ is probably the better athlete. But I say that, and I 100% thought Demetrius Johnson was going to whoop Henry Cejudo too. So it's either, you know, Henry Cejudo is super underrated and just needs to be tested against these big name guys, and he's going to, you know, be you know, the obvious number one in the world at bantamweight, featherweight, everything, or he got lucky. You know, I don't know. Like, it's still not necessarily known whether he is the top dog because of the way that fight played out and the way, you know, early stoppage, this, and this. Yeah, it's kind of a tainted win for him.
You know, obviously, you mentioned Miles Jermaine Sterling. He's got a fight this weekend. I mean, I got to imagine you're going to be peeking an eye on that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch that fight. I was actually, I was offered the Riviera fight too, providing Sterling didn't want it. And at first, Sterling said no, but then they came to some kind of agreement, and Sterling ended up taking the fight. So that was I was studying Jimmy Riviera. It's a really interesting fight because Riviera is, he fights similar to me, like a little bit shorter, kind of a go-forward guy, you know, really, really good boxing, really good in the pocket, clean combinations. And Sterling's weird. Sterling's real weird, especially having fought him and seeing how hard he is to hit. Like, it's one thing to watch him on film and not watching people miss, and I'm like, I'm not going to miss. I'm going to get him. And then to go in the cage with him and see how well he moves backwards and the different angles he hits and stuff. He's a hard guy to find in there, and I think if he comes out and fights the way, you know, I know he can, I think, you know, Sterling wins. Honestly, I'd like to see him win just because, you know, I fought him, and anyone you, after you fight somebody, you'd like to see him succeed. It looks better for you. So I really think Sterling could pull this out, but, you know, Riviera is not an easy guy to beat, obviously.
And, of course, in a couple of weeks, UFC 235, you'll be a part of this card taking on Alejandro Perez. Cody, man, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media and those sponsors that support you.
Just Cody Stamen everywhere across the board. Yeah, thanks for having me. I got to thank my manager, Jason Ellis, everyone at Redeem Sports, my coaches, Aaron, Kara Rowe, everyone that's helped me out in the training camp. It's been awesome. You know, pretty fortunate to have a lot of people that are just with me no matter what. And I think that's really important as an athlete. I think it's kind of how you grow. You need good people around you. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to putting on a great show for everybody on ESPN March 2nd. Yeah, let's go. I'm ready. I'm ready to lose that weight and be screwed up, make some money.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man fights on Saturday at Elite Fight League 3. It is Nate Smith. Looks to remain undefeated. Of course, we had Nate on the show previously. We actually had his coach, Mark Montoya, talk about him about a week or so ago. Nate, man, I appreciate time. It's fight week. Hey, what's the mindset right now?
Oh, man. It's honestly, it's just clear, brother. It's just clear. And it's a waiting game right now. I'm just waiting for Saturday. You know, my first professional co-main event, and it's being number one contender for the bantamweight for that promotion. So I'm like, you know, I'm appreciative of the opportunities, you know, enjoying the process now instead of later. I can't wait.
I was talking to another fighter last week. It was during fight week, and we were kind of talking about, like, this being, like, the worst week of actually camp because now it's just the weight cut and just kind of waiting for fight night to get here. Is that what would you, is this the longest week of training camp for you?
Honestly, yeah, I agree with everyone else. It's the worst week, but it's the best week at the same sense. Because we're pushing ourselves, you know, to end up getting, you know, make sure we make that weight, be professionals, and as well, you know, just to showcase our skill set. So we're like, oh, man, I got to get all this weight off. It's about to suck. I got to go, you know, run. I got to go to sauna. You know, got to do all these extra things just for one night. But that one night makes it worth. And once it's all said and done, you're not even going to think about it. You won't even remember you even doing all that just to make weight. So in a sense, it's a good and bad week. So I honestly, I can't complain about it.
I was looking at your IG, which, by the way, is the Savage King 125, where you said, locked in and stay focused on your goal. Now, maybe I read too much into things, but is staying focused, has that ever been kind of something you've had a battle with?
Yes, actually, I did have a battle with, because me and my family have been suffering some major losses along the way. And some very, you know, very close people to me have, you know, gone on to the next life, and it hurt me, you know. And Coach Mark Montoya, me and him had a discussion about the matter, and just, you know, trying to continue to stay and remain focused on the goal that's at hand. And from my past, you know, from my relative that passed on, and that's constantly telling me how proud they are of me, you know, being, you know, the first in my family to go to school, to get out, to be in the position I'm in. They would get very upset with me if I, you know, don't continue to move on and move forward, because that's the ultimate goal overall. And I'm going to continue to do this. And I've been focused. I've been zoned in. Even guys in the gym, including, you know, my teammate Anthony Smith, you know, saying, like, I've never seen you like this beforehand, you know, and I'm ready. I'm just ready. I'm just staying locked in, staying focused.
Has training kind of allowed you to kind of, I know you can't completely forget what's going on in your personal life, but it's kind of like this outlet that kind of, you know, lets you kind of not be quite on the mind?
In a sense, it does, but at the same time, I am only able to control what I'm able to control, if that makes sense. So if I'm able to control my focus and only me, I'm going to control that. Regardless from me getting outside sources of people coming to tell me, like, hey, condolences, you know, let's try to keep a clear mindset, so on and so forth, because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's always going to be me to end up getting that figured out, because either I'm mentally there or I'm not. And I am mentally there. I've been through a lot of tough situations in my life growing up in the West Side of Chicago that put me, you know, made me who I am with this tough, thick skin. And I mean, man, it's from even wrestling itself. I mean, I've been in situations, been on the big national stages, been on the big world stages. And I have to stay focused. I have to stay focused. There was a lot of things that was going on during those times. So it gave me an excuse. I'm not trying to have no excuse. Regardless, I'm trying to stay locked in.
The one thing I say all the time is you can only worry about those things you control. Those outside things you just can't worry about. I mean, it's very related to the fight game. Like, you can only worry about yourself and what you're doing in training. You can't worry about, hey, what Bill is doing here in preparations for yourself.
Right. And I cannot. I'm not going to worry about the next man. Your job is to worry about me and what I'm about to do to you. I'm not worried about no human being. I'm going out there to do what I'm supposed to do. I've been training my butt off. I've been improving significantly. Then as well as shows. And then I continue to try to grow from there, even if, you know, I show it to my coaches and my teammates. And then probably the next following would be like, okay, so let me see what if I can do with this type of improvement that I'm where I'm at now. So I continue to grow, continue to climb that mountain, my man. I mean, I don't know how hard I got to express that, but people gonna realize that every time they see me, it's a different me, especially in that cage, especially in that cage.
What's the difference in you that you see in yourself right now as opposed to when you fought back in October against Parker?
The difference is, honestly, how I see it, if I can beat my own self from me looking at my past fight, I can see holes. I can see some things that need to be tweaked on. I can see the things that I was doing wrong, regardless of me dominating that fight. At the end of the day, there was still room for improvement. and who I am now from who I was then from the last fight isn't two entirely different people.
And the fight come up here on Saturday night, Bill, a veteran of the sport, you know, 14-7 in his career. Obviously, I'm sure that's probably in his camp, he views that as a kind of a feather in his cap. And this one, hey, he's got the experience. He's seen things that maybe you haven't seen. You know, what do you see as your advantages in this fight?
I see my my not only my confidence, my physical attribute, and as well my mental attribute being, you know, just being ahead of his. But at the same time, I have yet to reach my prime, man. And that's what making me even more deadly, especially for me having a ton. I'm pretty sure Bill ended up seeing and know, and he knows, because me and Bill actually have history. I've been around fight game a long time, and Bill has as well. You know, even took on LC Davis and, you know, a lot of top name guys. Man, I honestly have no words for how I'm going to dominate this fight. Honestly, I'm going to do what I do best, is step in that cage and, you know, come out with a win, man. And I refuse to lose. Losing is not an option. It's just a done deal with me. So I'd rather die than lose. It's just that simple.
What's the history between you and Bill?
Back in the day, actually, his head coach was Eric Kenai Cope. And they were recruiting me to, you know, come out there. And I did went out there and train for a while. And I got quite a few guys that, you know, that still train over there at that particular gym. But a whole bunch of things has happened. That was like years ago. And me and Bill had trained with each other for a while back. And not many people know that unless they've been around and know exactly what I'm talking about, especially in the state of Iowa. So anybody that's watching this podcast in the state of Iowa, you know what I'm talking about. But Bill knows that I have all those tons of fights. He's been around me since I was an amateur when I very first started. So I'm pretty sure he wasn't paying attention to me, you know, like others who hasn't. But now I'm here, I'm in their face. They like, okay, I should have been paying attention close to this kid, or, you know, I'm not going to, you know, think much of them. They just think me as a stepping stool, which is not the case, because I'm not no stepping stool for nobody, period. If they know me for that long, they should know me well. This is not going to be an easy fight. This is something that you should really take in consideration of what I'm going to do, how I'm going to do it. This is a game of chess. Let's play some chess. And I'm very good at playing chess.
Is there any big memory you had of the training sessions with Bill in the past?
Oh, man. Wrestling-wise, we were like flow sparring, if I remember correctly. Me, him, PJ Rashad, my boy Devonair, we were all getting, you know, just getting in. And then I showcased my wrestling skills, and I think it was the very first day when I was at Team Hard Drive, and just training over there with Eric Koch and Kenai Koch, you know, getting in with those guys. And they're like, he's like, you're a really good wrestler. He's like, you know, you got some skill. He's like, you can do a lot in this sport. I'm like, coming from a veteran like that, I was, during the time, I was like, I very appreciate it, and still do appreciate it. And I appreciate Bill. I like Bill. But come Saturday night, it's going to be an entirely different story. Like, we can be friends outside the cage, continue to be friends outside the cage, hopefully. But once we're inside the cage, it's just strictly business.
And, of course, it all goes down on Saturday night. Nate, man, I really appreciate time. Good luck on Saturday night, man. Of course, you got to let everyone know they can find out on social media. And, of course, those sponsors that are supporting you for this fight.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to my sponsor, Virus. You know, got on my shirt right here. And then, as well, shout out to Onyx Sports. Shout out to Team Iridium taking care of me. Coyos Beverage, Rush Jones Law, then as well. You got Terp House team, Terp House in the building, as always. And, you know, you guys can follow me on Twitter at NateTheSavageS1. You guys can follow me on Instagram, TheSavageKing125. You can also follow me on Facebook, which is Nate the Savage Smith fight fan page. I've been getting quite a few followers lately, so hope you guys follow me on there. Continue to keep up with me on my journey, and I really appreciate you for having me on the podcast, Jason.
And there was my conversations with Marlon Chito Vera, Cody Stamann, and Nate Smith. I appreciate those guys giving me some time to talk about their upcoming fights. Of course, be sure to head over to themmareport.com to hear some other interviews that I have. Talk to Justin Sumter, John Duma, Devontae Smith, Jalen Turner, all right now, some of the latest interviews up on themmareport.com. So be sure to check out those interviews. But of course, this weekend, we've got the UFC card in Prague and of course the Bellator card in Dublin. And true story, as I was pulling up the fight cards, we're about to talk about, me and Daniel both didn't realize the Bellator cards via tape delay.
Which is just like, there's only one fight people might care about. It's the James Gallagher fight. And if that fight has an exciting finish, it's going to be on social media. People are going to see it, and they're going to be like, I don't want to watch this on tape delay. Like,
it's a European fight card. Let's call it what it is. Let's just say this is really, ultimately, it is the Bellator European series, even though I think it's not technically the Bellator European series. But yeah, it's a fight card for the Irish audience.
Look, between Bellator and the UFC card this week, the way this show is formulated was we spend most of our time recapping the week, and we're going to spend a little time previewing, very little, compared to the next week. This is what it's going to be like. I'm making a prediction. A very small time recapping and a big time previewing.
I think it's pretty safe to say we're going to be, you know, we'll start next week talking about UFC 235. Yeah. That's going to be a majority of the show.
Yeah. So this weekend is like there are fights happening. We will talk very little about Bellator 217. We will talk maybe if something cool happens at UFC Fight Night in the Czech Republic. But man, these two fight cards—they're gonna feel like a chore to watch, Jason.
I'll just be honest about it. When it comes to the Bellator card, I'm interested to see how James Gallagher bounces back, you know, after this. So, I mean, I'll go back on the zone after this fight's over and watch it. But, you know, there's not a lot on the rest of the card that really sticks out to you in terms of the Bellator card. I guess if you were going to give a reason of why they're tape delaying this is that they don't want to go up against a UFC card on ESPN Plus at the same time. I guess that would be the reason about it. You know, looked at, you know, the Paramount schedule, it's Forrest Gump and The Dark Knight Rises what is airing on in the afternoon. But you know, look, it's, you know, we talk about it plenty. Just it's you know, it's frustrating that this fight's not going to happen. Of course, your main card for the UFC card is going to start 2 p.m. Eastern time, 11 a.m. Eastern time for the prelims. And man, not a lot sticks out to you on this UFC card, Danny. I mean, obviously you've got an interesting matchup headlining this card of Blachowicz and Santos. I think, you know, you have to imagine Blachowicz is going to try to get this fight to the ground. I don't see him trying to have a striking matchup with Thiago Santos. You know, the Dotson-Peter Yan fight is definitely a fight that sticks out to me on the main card.
Yeah, to me there are three things to look forward to for the main card of fight night. It's watching Magomed Ankalaev fight against Abreu. I think Ankalaev has a lot of potential. I know he had a tough loss to Paul Craig, but that was a fight he dominated. So him and light heavyweight, have my eye out for that. And the other two is the main event and the Dotson-Peter Yan fight. I mean, Dotson-Peter Yan is a hell of a fight. Really excited. I mean, you have a guy in John Dotson who has really had a lot of success in the UFC. Big time name. Coming off a loss to Jimmy Rivera. And he's kind of on the downswing, downward momentum. And he's facing a guy in Peter Yan who just looks like an awesome fighter. Upward momentum, biggest fight in his career. A fight in which he's a pretty solid favorite, which it was a little surprising, but you analyze the fight and it's not as surprising. So I'm super excited about that one. I think Yan will actually beat John Dotson. I kind of agree with the odds. I just feel like Dotson's fighting style lends itself to lose decisions, and Yan, I think, is going to be aggressive, and he's not going to get caught. So I think that's a story for these guys. Like, Peter can't get caught, and then for Santos, John Blachowicz, for Jan, he's a pretty good stand-up fighter for sure. There's a reality where these two fight on the feet and he outpoints Santos, but there's just so much danger with how Santos strikes and the power he brings. That you're right, it makes no sense to not wrestle with him. So for him, like Jan, it's all about not getting caught. I'm going to – in one fight, I think Peter Jan won't get caught. I think he'll win. Whereas for the main event, I actually do think Thiago Santos is going to catch Jan Blachowicz and you know, beat him. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that fight. I mean, it's an important light heavyweight fight. Both those guys have gone on runs lately.
I think those last three fights could be very fun to watch. Just action-packed fights.
Definitely. Like, John Vellante is always a fun person to watch. He's
taking because on... he blocks punches with his head, yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. I noticed
there's not much boxing defense when it comes to John Vellante.
Notice how you don't say last four fights. Like, you're not looking forward to Liz Carmouche wrestling seminar.
Look. Liz Carmouche, I mean, she's going to find herself into a title fight. That's going to happen.
Yep, she's talented.
I would say there's one fight in the prelim that sticks out like a sore thumb to me. And I'm shocked it's the second fight of the night. Rustam Kovalev and Carlos Diego Fajeya.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great fight. Probably going to go all 15 minutes, but great fight.
I didn't realize Kovalev has won five in a row.
Yeah, but they're always by decision.
It's true. But what the hell is that doing? Second fight, and Fajeya's won three in a row. He's really rebounding.
Okay, all right, look at these five wins in a row. I want to say only one of these guys is still in the UFC. Norma Park, Chris Wade, Leandro Silva, Jason Sago, Desmond Green, Cajun Johnson. Johnson's definitely been cut. Dez is still in the UFC. Sago, I don't think, is in the UFC. Chris Wade's definitely not in the UFC. Leandro Silva is not in the UFC. So, yeah, all these guys are not in the UFC besides Desmond Green.
That's a good point.
That's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
So you go good fight. The other fight to look forward to is Demir Hadzovic versus Polo Reyes, just because I do think that will be the fight of the night. That fight, I think, will be a barn burner. But, yeah, I think Kabilov Ferreira, and Ferreira's a guy who actually trains where I live in the Rio Grande Valley. So, yeah, looking forward to that fight for sure. But, yeah, the fight card itself, But sometimes when we have fight cards like this in the UFC, those tend to be the ones that really pleasantly surprise you with what actually happens.
Yeah, and the prelims, by the way, are on ESPN2 at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. So if you don't have a ESPN Plus subscription, at least catch out these prelims on ESPN2. But I mean, it's only $5 a month. You know, I mean, that's a great deal. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's a great deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also, I would say another guy I'm interested in on the prelims is Dwight Grant. Let's see how he bounces back after that loss to Zach Otto. He'll be in the feature prelim. But I love me a little afternoon MMA. I'm a big fan. Then it kind of frees up your Saturday night to do whatever you want to do.
It's going to be so much fun to watch this on ESPN 2 in the morning. Wake up in the morning after a late night. You know, I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, what's that?
Let's mention some other MMA news before we get out of here. Adesanya Gaslam interim title fight booked for UFC 236. As a recording of the show, no idea what the venue is. I've talked to a lot of people over the last couple weeks about this, and they're like, yeah, we have no idea. It seems like some front runners are Atlanta, maybe New York. I heard Texas. So I don't mind the interim title fight. I think it makes all the sense in the world. This is actually one of the few interim title fights that makes sense.
I agree with you for sure. I hate interim titles, but you're right in that it does make sense. It's a fight I'm looking forward to. And, yeah, man, I definitely don't think it's going to – it's not a big money fight, but it's a fight – if you're an MMA fan or a casual, you can't help but not be excited for something like this one.
Now, here's the crazy thing. So this is April 13th. Kevin Gastelum beat Uriah Hall to win the Ultimate Fighter on April 13th, 2013.
That's nuts.
I saw Kelvin tweet that yesterday. I was like, wow, that's going to be a storyline come the week of that fight.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, they look into stuff like that.
And then I saw, I think there's been like 20 interim title fights now in UFC, or this 21st interim title fight, and I think like the 14th since like 2012.
Look, I believe it, Jason. Honestly, I feel like that number is low. I feel like we get a title fight, an interim title fight every other week, but I guess the thought is this one does make sense. I mean, Robert Whittaker, constantly, he gets put in fights and he's taken out. Might as well crown a champion while he's recuperating. And Kelvin and Adesanya, I'm sign me up. Would watch, as you say.
Yeah, man, that's gonna be a fun fight. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, cannot wait for next week's show to we talk about UFC 235. Just an awesome fight card. Really looking forward to you know, it's always interesting around a John Jones fight, and it's really been, you know, it's been quiet around the Jones camp since that Nevada hearing. Like, we haven't really heard anything.
Yeah,
I'm scared. Something's gonna happen.
Oh yeah.
We're at this point. I think we just expect it now. Like, something crazy is going to happen next week with John Jones. It'll probably happen like this afternoon after we record the show.
That's the most likely time for sure. But the UFC is prepared too. It's why they booked two title fights. It's why Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler's on it.
How about this one? Did you see Robbie Lawler is a 2-1 underdog in that fight?
Wow. No, I didn't. That's crazy.
Yeah, I saw someone post the odds. And currently, as we do this show, Ben Askren is -255. He opened up at -185.
Man, Linus.
And so people have bet on him. That is, that's an interesting one. By the way, also, how is Jeremy Stephens to beat Magomed Sharipov not on the main card? I get why you want to put it on ESPN. I get it. But, man, I'd rather see that fight on the main card than the Tisha Torres fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's also something where I feel like you could absolutely main event the prelim with Walker and Serkanov. So
here's a question. Mm-hmm. If for some reason Anthony Smith can't make it the fight night, and let's say it happens during fight week, does the UFC put Johnny Walker in that fight?
No. No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
People are probably saying, Jason, don't say it. We don't want anything to happen.
I don't even know the commission could regulate that.
No. But, man, I tell you what, if he goes out there and puts on another performance, man, that stock is going to rise.
Oof. Yep. For sure. Johnny Walker, absolutely. One performance in, you were like, whoa. You know, so, yeah.
Garbrandt Munoz, that's a great fight on the card, too.
It's a heck of a fourth best fight on that fight.
Prelims are really good, too. I mean, it's just up and down. It's one of those UFC fight cards that you're just like, okay, I've got to make sure that I'm in front of a television. You know, I haven't heard anything about DirecTV in the UFC, and that's really that's a big issue for the UFC.
Yeah.
Particularly the fact of a lot of their fans do tend to go out to watch UFC pay-per-views at bars, and that's how UFC pay-per-views are get to bars. And you know, the backup plan when there was an issue last time was for it to be streamed, for bars to pick it up via streaming. And I was like, I don't know if that's the smartest thing.
No, I was watching a boxing fight on DAZN at a bar, and it kept on buffering.
Man, it's tough, man. It's really tough to, because you gotta have a lot, you know. You have to have a high download speed, and man, hopefully a deal gets done between the UFC and DirecTV. But if not, that's a big issue for the UFC. It really is, and I do in sports bar marketing, the conversation has come up, and I'm just like, fellas, I don't think this is a reliable way to get the pay per view.
Yeah,
because newsflash, most majority of the bars you walk into, all they have is DirecTV. Very few will have Dish or maybe some type of cable service.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue.
That's an issue for sure, and I think. It wouldn't be surprising to do another temporary deal where they just replicate it like they did with the last pay-per-view.
I think it says a lot about DirecTV calling the UFC's bluff. I think that's what it is. Yeah. I mean, look, the UFC wants, you know, the number you hear is they want 70%. I don't think DirecTV is going to give that to them.
No, these companies don't back down.
No. I mean, I think the way you look at it is you look at our sport, it's heading to, we're pretty much on a streaming platform pretty much for the most part.
I mean, yeah.
You look at ESPN Plus, look at Fight Pass, look at DAZN, I mean, Flow Combat. I mean, we're becoming a sport that's not, you know, and how much of that is just basically kind of how we all consume sports in 2019?
It's totally reflective of that, but it's one of those awkward transition points where while we're migrating to those platforms, the bars is such a big presence for big fights or really any fights, and they still use DirecTV. That's one of those awkward hiccups because I think the UFC is like, well, we're demanding this much because, look, we're going to cut you anyway eventually, so we don't need you, so we want the money.
Oh, but look, they want you to buy it on UFC.TV. Like, let's not kid ourselves. That's where they want you to buy it, because I thought it was interesting that I haven't noticed it before, but I noticed it on the artwork for this pay-per-view, how it mentions UFC.TV. That's what – but. I love the UFC.TV platform. I love it. Not always the greatest stream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my home, I've had super fast internet. You know, it's 100 up, 100 down. I mean, it's solid internet. Like when I watch YouTube TV, I think maybe I've had YouTube TV now for what, probably 4 months. It's maybe buffered once. So.
But with UFC TV, you have issues.
Yeah. So okay. I don't know why that is. Like, I've tried it on my Fire Stick. I've tried it on the SmartCat, you know, on the my Samsung app, on my TV. It's, you know, I've always had issues.
Well, they want you to buy it on UFC TV because they get more money.
Oh, yeah, they get 100% of the revenue. I don't blame them. I get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you can always check the show out on RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. And a new episode comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix. On Radio Influence.
The earlier tag, meaning today's the first day, February 19th, the last day is March 5th. Understand, when the earlier you tag them, that tells you the worse the negotiations are. That tells you how far apart they are. If you tag them now, that says they're going nowhere in the negotiations, and we're just going to put the tag on them now, and then maybe it'll get them to come to the table with a more reasonable offer. Their side, and that's that. The later you make the tag, normally what it indicates is that you're making some progress, that you'd like to get a deal done, and you don't want to put the tag on them now to antagonize them. You want to try to see if you can't inch a little bit closer towards getting a deal done.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.